Dutch guy, and then probably in charge of, you know, potentially hundreds and hundreds of troops. And the master gunnery sergeant comes into his office, and he says, "Colonel, I got some bad news for you." And the colonel's like, "Well, Master Guns, what do you have?" "The colonel, I don't know how to tell you this. I mean, it's really, really bad news." And he says, "What is it?" He said, "Sir, the troops asked me to come and speak to you." "All right, Gunny, what's the problem?" "Sir, they wanted me to tell you that they don't really love you very much anymore." Now, if the colonel heard that, what do you think he would say? "I don't care if they love me or not, but they will respect me." See, for a man, the greatest need that he has is to be respected. And for a woman, the greatest need she has is to be loved. And so what ends up happening is our fights look like this, is without love, she reacts in such a way that's without respect. Well, without respect, he reacts in such a way that's without love. And it's just this crazy cycle that keeps going around and around and around. And I've had so many guys that say, "She speaks to me like no man would ever speak to me. No respect at all." When I did student ministry, I'd have all these, you know, Marine Corps officers or drill instructors that were helping in our student ministry. And you'd get these 15-year-old kids that they'd say, "Hey, I want you to do this." And it's like, "Oh, I ain't doing it." And I think, man, this is an officer in the Marine Corps where grown men do everything he says to do, and you get some 15-year-old that won't do it. And it drove him nuts. I mean, it just drove him absolutely nuts. But that's what happens in our marriages, is you have some of these guys, some of you guys are in charge of great things, doing great things that you tell people what to do, and they do it. They don't question you. But then when you come home and you say, "Hey, I think we should," and all of a sudden you're questioned by your kids and by your wife and everything else. It's like, wait a second, I get no respect in my own home. Or the wife who wants to be loved and wants to be cared for, wants to be nourished and nurtured and cherished and all those things. Now you get some guy that's coming in and doesn't do those things. And so you don't feel loved, and so you respond in such a way that he takes it without respect. But he does love you, and she does respect you. But we just get in this crazy cycle. And so it's a great, great book to work through. But the vast majority of the couples that I get in for counseling, they fight like this. And men will typically say, "She has no respect. She talks to me like I'm a stupid kid." And the woman slumps down in her chair and she cries and she says, "He doesn't love me." And so there are some general things that we can do better with one another in our communication so that we can get off of the crazy cycle. Proverbs 12, verse 18 says this. It says, "Speaking recklessly is like the thrust of a sword, but the words of the wise bring healing." And so that word recklessly is the same word as thoughtless. And so you could say this: words that are thoughtless are equivalent to being stabbed. And so there are words that are said without thinking. Those are thoughtless words. They're reckless words. And the comparison that he makes is being stabbed by a sword. And so when you're stabbed by something, I mean, it's immediate. You know, I mean, the damage is done. Whereas number two, words that are wise bring healing. Well, there's no quick fix to words that have been thrust in like a sword. So if you say, "Oh, sorry, I didn't mean that." It brings healing. But once you say them, like, you can't take it back. You know, in South Carolina, we had a radio station there, and so there was a 7-second delay on there. So they do a live call-in show, and you had 7 seconds. And so somebody might call in, and it's a live show, and so they want to be stupid, and they'll start cussing or yelling or screaming or just doing something dumb. And so, you had 7 seconds to cut that off. So what we would hear when you're listening to the radio station is, "Okay, we got a caller on line one." "Don't know what happened there. We lost the caller." That's what we would hear. But it's a 7-second delay that you could just kind of take it back and never hear. Don't you wish you have a 7-second delay on your tongue? Because words that are reckless stab like a sword. You know, do you ever wonder what your kids are going to say or your grandkids are going to say when you hear the term, my mom or my dad used to say, whatever. Sometimes I kind of worry when people say, oh, I remember when you said, and I'm like, okay, what did I say? Like, what is it? Oh, good, that was okay. You know, like my dad, forgot to breathe. That's one of the sayings I remember from my dad. Or maybe one of those things where you say, I wish my mom or dad would have said this or that. You know, I hear people all the time say, my dad never said he loved me. Well, my dad, to this day, my dad's never said he loves me. Ever. It's my dad. Do I know? I know he loves me, but he doesn't say it. I can complain about it. I can make excuses for my life because of it. But what I've decided to do is my kids will always know that I love them. That's how you react to it. And so the mouth is, it's the most powerful part of the body, because with the mouth, we affect destinies. And so Roman numeral number 3 is that words that burn determine the course of life. Words that burn determine the course of life. So James 3, listen to it. It says, so also the tongue is a small part of the body, and yet it boasts of great things. Behold how great a forest is set aflame by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, the very world of iniquity. The tongue is set among our members as that which defiles the entire body and sets on fire the course of our life and is set on fire by hell. And so we've all seen how just one spark can start a forest fire. But this verse speaks on something that we all have that's much more powerful, and that's the power of the tongue. See, a fire destroys houses, and our words can destroy homes. And there have been more homes destroyed by words than houses destroyed by fires. It's our words. And I think every one of us can go back and we can think of something that was said to us when we were a kid that just kind of marks us for who we are. You know, those words never leave your mind. I remember when I was, I guess probably 7, 8 years old, somewhere in there, I was playing Little League Baseball. But it wasn't T-ball like the real little guys. I think it was like coach pitch, you know, the next age up before we're actually pitching and everything. And so still learning the game. And I remember I was on third base, and there was a pop fly to the third baseman, but it was in foul territory. So of course, you know, as soon as the ball's hit, then I immediately get off the base, and then I see it's foul. So I'm just kind of, you know, just kind of hanging out there. Well, I knew the third baseman was going to catch it. He caught it, literally standing right next to me, and I was off the bag, and he got the ball, and he tagged me. I'm thinking, well, I just went back to the base and thought I was fine, because I figured, well, I'm okay, because it was a foul ball. I didn't realize that if he caught it, then he could tag me as well. I didn't know that. So he tags me out. And I'm confused, like, what do you mean I'm out? You know, it's a foul ball, and the umpire says, you know, you're out. So I go back to the bench. Again, 7 years old, 8 years old. So that night, when the game's over, I don't remember if we won or lost. Don't even remember what team I was on. I just remember my dad saying, you're an embarrassment to me. You're walking home. I remember that. I'm not making an excuse for why my behavior is the way it is. But I remember my dad saying, you're an embarrassment to me. You're walking home. And I think, I don't want my kids to have memories like that. But you never forget words that were said. You know, especially those reckless words that stab like a sword. Like, they stay with you forever. I wish I had a 7-second delay so I wouldn't say those things. And so there's a principle that we use in biblical counseling, remove and replace, or put off and put on. But I think in this area of communication, it's really, really important. And so let's understand Roman numeral number four, words that edify or build up bring grace. And let me explain this from Ephesians 4, beginning in verse 25. He says, therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one of you, with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. Do not give the devil an opportunity. He who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with one who has need. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. Do not grieve the Holy Spirit of God, by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you, along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving each other, just as God in Christ also has forgiven you. And so the principle here is to put on and put off. So there's certain things that you need to put on, certain things that you need to take off. The idea is like when you, say you've been working out in the garden, I mean, you're just filthy, dirty, muddy, and you come into the house and you can't touch anything. I mean, you're just filthy. And so you go in there, you take a shower, you clean everything up, and then you put on a new set of clothes. And you know how refreshing that is? You know, it's just like, ah, so nice. That's the whole idea of putting off and putting on. So you put off certain things, but you don't just put them off. You have to replace them with something. You remove these things and you replace them with something. So let's work through, beginning in verse 25, what's the put on? Number one is be honest, right? Be honest. Put off lying, put off falsehood, and be here, put on speaking the truth. So be honest and put on speaking the truth. But we're not simply to speak the truth, though. Ephesians 4:15 says we're to speak the truth in love. Okay, speak it in love. Don't just say, well, it's true. Right? Say it in love. Number two, keep current. Keep current. In other words, solve today's problems today. Why is that important? Well, because Matthew 6, each day has enough trouble of its own, doesn't it? I mean, it's just hard. And what happens, number two, unresolved anger often leads to bitterness. It often leads to bitterness. So when I think of bitterness, what happens is when you have a fire going, I mean, just a big bonfire going, I mean, you can look from a long way away and go, man, that's a big fire. You look at your kid and say, hey, don't go by that fire, it's really hot. As it continues to burn, what happens is it goes down to where it's just glowing embers. And you can't see it from real far away. But when you're really close, you realize, okay, man, that's glowing down there. You realize it's hotter now than it was when it was a big fire. Well, what does it take to get that those glowing embers to turn into a big fire again? What do? Blow on it. Yeah, fan the flame. What else can you do? Add some wood to it. You can even kick it. You can stab it. You can poke at it. And it just pops up in fire. Well, that's what happens in marriage. Is you get bitterness, and you just say something little. So what did you do today? What do you mean, what did I do today? You don't think I do anything around here? Just a little thing, and all of a sudden, you get this big fight going. And it's usually over dumb stuff like chicken wings. It's usually over, is the appointment at 1 o'clock or 2 or 12 o'clock? And why do you fight over stuff like that? Not because it's reasonable to fight over stuff like that. You fight over that stuff because you've got bitterness. And so unresolved anger, if you don't keep things current, you'll get bitter to where all of a sudden you're fighting over stuff that you're going, what in the world? Like, how do we start fighting about that? And so when somebody's bitter, they're irritable and they're unhappy. Have you ever heard the saying, bitterness is like swallowing poison, hoping the other person dies? That's bitterness. The next one here, clamming up. Okay, keep current. Clamming up gives the devil a foothold. When people quit talking, then the devil has won. So Jesus was never angry when he was attacked. He was angry with sin. And when we're angry, it's usually because when we've been hurt. And so when it says here to be angry but don't sin, the put on there is to put on anger. You go, well, that just sounds so counterproductive. Like, why would I put on anger? Well, what anger does, anger is a God-given emotion intended to help us solve problems quickly and biblically. Anger is a God-given emotion intended to help us solve problems quickly and biblically. Because what happens is when you're angry, you're like, okay, you know what? Let's stop it all. We're going to deal with this. That's what anger allows you to do. So it says be angry, but then it also says don't sin. So it's okay to be angry. Jesus got angry, but it's not okay to sin in anger. There should be some things that anger you. Okay, this that statement I read earlier from the Church of God, that made me angry. Like, man, what in the world? I mean, I see why so many people are in the churches are just failing. It's like they can't believe this book because the people pastoring the churches don't believe in this book. And so what ends up happening when you have unresolved anger, though, unresolved anger leads to resentment. And you can see how the continuum goes. It goes from resentment to bitterness to hatred to murder. But you're going to have to bring up sticky situations. You're going to have to bring up issues and problems. And so what do you do when that happens? Well, number one, you have to ask some questions. So six questions to ask. Number one, do I have the facts right? Don't you hate it when you accuse somebody and then you were in the wrong? Like you didn't have the facts right? Oh, that drives me nuts. It's like, oh, my bad. Like, make sure you've got the facts right first. Before you make an accusation, make sure you have the facts right. When we counsel, and I get a lot of people that will come in and they just want to share their side of the story. And they don't want the other side of the story. And I always tell them, I say, you know, Proverbs teaches for me to give counsel without hearing both sides of the story, I'm a fool. I don't want to be a fool. And so I need to hear both sides of the story. Make sure you have the facts right first. Number two, should love hide it? Should love hide it? And this is really important because we need to ask the question, is this sinful? Or is this just a preference? Is it hindering growth? So there are some things that because I love you, I can just hide. We don't need to deal with that. It's all right. You don't have to win every argument. You don't have to be right on everything. Just let love hide it. Now, if it's a sin issue, you approach it as a sin issue. But if it's just a preference, then just leave it as a preference. Chicken wings, not seafood. Or seafood, not chicken wings. It's just a preference. If you really love somebody, then you'll let it hide it. And typically, we do that really well early in the relationship. But as the relationship goes on, we stop letting love hide things. Three, is my timing right? Is my timing right? This is really important because we do need to deal with difficult things, but there's a timing issue as well. I remember a number of years ago, is I'd come home and I'd kind of get all that was going on. You know, this kid was being bad, or this is happening with school, or this bill needs to be paid, or we don't have enough of this, or whatever. And it's like, it got to the point where I didn't want to come home. Because it was just dealing with issues and problems. And so as we talked through that, we talked about timing. Like, what does it look like for the timing to be right? Well, what I typically try to do is I try to call Sherry on my way home every day just to kind of get a temperature of what's going on in the house. You know, what's going on? Do we need to do anything? And sometimes Sherry would say, hey, you know what? I need to talk about Adam or whatever tonight at some point, just whenever you get a chance. Boy, that is so much nicer than walking into the house and saying, this is Adam, this is what he's doing, or whatever. Just the timing of it all. Most likely, it doesn't have to be taken care of right now. It can wait. And so home should be a refuge for both mom and dad. Husband and wife should have a refuge in their home. If home is a place where it's just dealing with problems all the time, one of you guys is not going to want to be home very much. You got to be really careful. So make sure your timing is right. Number four, is my attitude right? Is my attitude right? Like, why am I wanting to address this? What's my attitude of this? Number five, are my words loving? Are my words loving? And then number six, have I prayed for God's help? Really important to me, because you're going to have to deal with issues. You're going to have to deal with problems. That's just part of life. But you can't just hide behind and throw everything under the rug, because eventually all this stuff is going to have to be dealt with. So how do you deal with it? Well, you have to pray for God's help. Number two is you attack the problem, not the person. Attack the problem, not the person. Remember the word unwholesome in Ephesians 5. It says, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. The word unwholesome means rotten or any word that are unfit for use. Zig Ziglar, I like what he says. He says, failure is not a person, it's an event. Okay, it's not a person, it's an event. And so there's a diagram that I love to use. And the idea is that this is how most couples will fight. And so our energy here, ideally what we want to do is we want to take our energy and we want to solve problems. Like that's what we want to do, right? I mean, we're husband and wife. We want to be able to actually talk through, solve problems, not have to fight every time we do stuff. Is we want to take our energy and solve problems. But what we typically do is we either clam up or we blow up. Now, I grew up in a blow-up family, okay? I was the Greek mom, Filipino dad. We screamed. I mean, we were screamers about everything. And that's not the way to solve problems. Sherry grew up in a clam-up family. What I've noticed in my life is that I tend more to go back to clamming up now. But typically what we do is one person is the blow-up. He yells, he screams, he throws things or whatever. The other person is the clam-up. And the clam-up is, what's wrong? Nothing. Something's wrong. What's wrong? Nothing. Come on, tell me. I mean, obviously there's something wrong. I'm fine. So you can tell me, like, what's wrong? The only thing wrong is you keep asking me what's wrong. So here's what happens. So we get one guy who's blowing up, screaming, yelling, and then the clam up. So he blows up, he vomits it all up, and then he says, conversation over. And he goes from blowing up to clamming up. She says, or he says, oh, conversation is not over. He goes from clamming up to blowing up. And what ends up happening is you go back and forth from clamming up to blowing up to blowing up to clamming up. Just back and forth there. Okay, that's how most couples fight. But here's the real problem. Is when this isn't happening, and when this isn't happening, we actually think that everything's okay. And it's not. Because we've never taken our energy into solving problems. You know, one of the most common things that I ask couples when on the first session that I counsel them in, I'll say, can you guys go back and just kind of think through your history? What problems have you had that you've worked through and that you no longer bring up anymore? And you know what the typical answer is? Nothing. Like they can't think of one issue that they've ever had that they've actually been able to talk through, where one person was wrong, one person was right, been able to talk through, or both of them were just fighting about it, and maybe neither wrong, neither right, that they can go back. The typical response is they can't remember one thing, one problem that they've solved together as a couple. That's scary, isn't it? That's the norm, though. But to think, well, we don't fight very much, and so we think that everything's okay, but it's not. Because everything just goes underneath the rug. Everybody's just hiding everything. And so if we're going to solve problems, it means that we're not to just be right. Okay, we're not to just be right. Being right is overrated. Wouldn't you agree with that? And we're not to just tell the truth. We are to tell the truth, but not just tell the truth. We're not to just win an argument. We're called to a higher calling, and that's to build others up. Okay, we're called to a higher calling, that's to build others up. Truth is that we hide behind things like, well, I was right, or it's the truth, or I was frustrated, or I had a bad day. Like, what does that have to do with why are you... And we hear it with kids all the time, right? When kids are fussy, those moms will say, oh, he just needs a nap. There's no excuse for sin. Like, I know you had a bad day, but everybody can turn it on and off. You know, I think the funniest thing, I remember I was here at the Y, and one of the girls was answering the phone, and she said, she answered the phone, it's a great day at the Frank DeLuca Family YMCA. This is so-and-so, how can I help you? And this guy was on the phone, and he was so angry with her And I'm just standing there waiting, and he's just like going off. And you could just tell. And she's like, I am so sorry, sir, and we'll do whatever we can. When you come and see me. I'll make sure and take care of it. And you could just, I mean, you could hear this guy. He was just going, he was so angry with her. Took care of it. Gets off the phone. Phone rings again. And she's happy. She's fine. No problem. Gets off the phone. Phone rings again. It's a great day at the Frank DeLuca Family YMCA. This is so-and-so. How can I help you? And she says, didn't I tell you don't call me here? Click. And she said, he makes me so mad. Who was it? Her husband. See, she could turn it on and off. But she was bitter with her husband. And it's, I just had a bad day. What's the problem? Well, we said it in the second session. It's a heart issue. Look at Luke 6. It says, the good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth what is good, and the evil man out of the evil treasure brings forth what is evil. For the mouth speaks from that which fills the heart. And so evil words come from evil hearts. And so we can't use the excuse that somebody made you mad. Like, that's not an excuse. So when we're not talking about avoiding conflict, we need to ask the question, how can I use what I'm about to say to build my spouse up? In other words, how can we get past the point of making a point and telling them the truth to actually being helpful? And how can we choose our words and tone to be helpful? And so look at A here, put off words that tear down and attack the person. Okay, put off words that tear down and attack the person. So if we're going to solve problems, we have to attack the problem, not the person. And so always avoid and never use words like always and never. Right? Always avoid and never use words like always and never. Okay? You never take out the trash. Never. Remember last week I took out the trash? You always yell at me. I'm not yelling now. When you start using words like always and never, it really puts you in a position where I'm just fighting. It's attacking the person. Put off words like never or always or lazy or stupid, like those kind of words, because it's just problem. You're just making more problems. And instead, put on words that build up and attack the problem. So put on the words that build up and attack the problem. Okay, not the person, but the problem. And so if you're really going to love, you love by being careful what you say and how you say it. And so number three, you act, don't react. Act, don't react. If you're in a right relationship with God, it will be seen in your actions and your reactions. And so as well as you can, you want to put off communication that's a reaction. And so what you see in verse 31 is our reactions. And so you get words like bitterness, which means a smoldering resentment. We talked about that with the smoldering coals there. You get wrath, which is flaring outbursts of wild rage. Anger, which is internal smoldering. It's settled indignation. It's hostility. That you're seeking revenge. Clamor is more of the public quarreling. I always think it's so embarrassing when people will fight, like couples will fight in public. Isn't that embarrassing? Like, oh man, don't do that. You know, just kind of errand. And you think, well, if you'll do that in public, what would you do in private? I mean, if you're going to say those kind of things in public against each other, what would you say in private against each other? E, slander. Slander is speech that injures. It's like ongoing kind of defamation. What does it come from? It comes from a bitter heart. And then malice. Is that that's the desire to harm others or see them suffer. Those are all reactions. I mean, you're reacting to something. And so you want to put off those kind of communications, and then you want to put on communication that acts correctly. And so you define it this way, with kindness is benevolent or helpful. You want to be kind to one another, tenderhearted, it says, compassion, sympathetic, forgiving one another, and we talked about that, but essentially it's giving up your right to revenge or to hold a grudge. And so it's really important to replace sinful reactions with godly actions. Because it's so easy to react, isn't it? It's so easy just to kind of fly off the handle and stuff. And so conflicts occur only when each person reacts. It takes two to argue. And so when you look at this passage in Ephesians 4, and he says, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. You know, we commonly look at that and we say, well, that let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. We say, well, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. But that's actually not what the text is saying. He's saying, if you don't have anything nice to say, find something nice to say and say it. At the end of your conversation, when you're dealing with problems, when you're dealing here, at the end of it, the end result is you should feel built up. You should feel encouraged. You should have extended grace. Like, that's the idea, or grace should have been extended to you. That's the idea. If you're really communicating biblically, it doesn't mean you're not going to have difficult conversations. You will have difficult conversations. At the end of the conversation, though, you're not in separate rooms, or you're not angry with each other and yelling at each other or cold to each other. At the end of the conversation, both of you should feel like you've been built up and encouraged and edified and equipped, and you've been extended grace. That's the end result. That's when you know, okay, we can actually solve problems rather than just putting things under the covers or under the rug. And so we want to communicate like two lovers, not two lawyers. Sorry, Caleb. And so the energizing cycle, notice the difference. So his love then motivates her respect. Her respect motivates his love. That's the energizing cycle. The question, I remember in the book, it asked, how do you get off the crazy cycle? Where the without love, she responds without respect, he responds without love. How do you get off of the crazy cycle? And I can tell you this, and this is what the book says as well. Whoever's the most mature is the one who will get off the crazy cycle. Whoever says, you know what, you're right. I hadn't thought about it like that. That's what is going to get you to transfer out of that crazy cycle into the energizing cycle. And so how to communicate and resolve conflicts, which your spouse will close with this, is A, B, C, D, E. I think I got this from Chip Ingram. A here, ask advice. Ask advice. One of the best ways to honor your spouse is to ask for their advice. And they have opinions. Okay? But when you ask for advice, what you're doing is you're telling them that you value them. It's, I value what you think. I want input from you into my life. Like, it's important. Ask for their advice. B, brag publicly. We talked about it in the last session. Okay? Remember, just do it in a way that's honoring, not in a way that's negative. C, compliment often. Compliment often. I've never had a couple in for marriage counseling where they walk in and say, you know, man, they compliment me too much. Tell them to knock it off. Like, I've never had that before. And so when I compliment, I build you up. That's the purpose I was given my mouth for. And then D, directly express gratitude. In other words, thank them specifically for something they've done. Okay? Hey, it's not that, hey, thanks for everything. Hey, thank you for this. You know, I always appreciate, one of the things I really appreciate when after a sermon is you get a lot of people say, oh, great sermon, thanks, you know, because people are just nice. It doesn't even have to necessarily be a great sermon. But I really like when they'll say, you know, when you said this, like that was really impactful. Or in our elders meeting last week, Cain said, man, I really appreciate the last 3 weeks how clear the gospel's been. Like, I appreciate that. Rather than, hey, great sermon. And I appreciate that too. But when there's a specific thing, it is important. So when you directly express gratitude for your spouse, like, do it. Hey, thank you for doing this. Thank you for doing that. I love the way you do this or that. I thought it was neat. You know, last night, Erica was saying, Trevor is such a hard worker. Like, I so appreciate how much of a hard worker he is. Like, that's important. So directly express gratitude. E, exhort sparingly. To exhort means to preach. Okay, preach sparingly. Don't make every issue a huge issue. And you have to ask yourself, is this more about me or about them? And if it's more about you, then shut your mouth. Let love hide it. And if your goal is, okay, when we're all done with this, I want to make sure that they feel as awful as possible about what they've done. Well, then there's a real benefit to yelling or belittling or berating them. But if that's not the goal, then yelling and belittling and berating, nagging, that's not going to accomplish the goal. And so when I build up, it glorifies God, and when I tear down, it glorifies me. I love the quote, "It's better to be thought of as a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt." Better be thought of as a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt.